Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game, and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the GM Shuffle.
It's a hard injury to overcome. You lose your left tackle in the NFL. It's a hard injury to overcome. This, to me, shifts the odds. I really think this puts Philly as the favorite in the East.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. Michael, you are back in New Jersey, buddy. How was your time out west?
It was long, man. It was long. I was like living out of a suitcase. You know when you wake up in the room and you don't know where the hell you are half the time, you know? And so, yeah, it was long. It was good to be back. You know, it was good to be kind of good to see everybody on the trip. Good to see you sit there at the Circa with the great Bill AD and Derek Stevens as we pondered the world, you know? I mean, it was awesome. But I didn't see Stephen Bond. He was down in Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. I mean, I think he must – it's like Batman. Once he slides down that pole when he's off on Monday – he's headed that way, right?
Yeah, he's got his obligations out in California. So, you know, I mean, we can't blame the guy. He's got to be in two places at once sometimes here. But
I would have loved this. You know, they should have like an amusement where you could slide down the pole and go from Bruce Wayne into Batman. I mean, wouldn't you love to do that? Like two things I would love to do. I would love to dunk. Like, I would love to have a legitimate be able to dunk and two, slide down the bat pole. Those would be the two things I'd want to do.
Hop into the phone booth like Superman, you know? You can do that. Being able to dunk, though, it would be a fun thing to do, which I was close to doing that in high school. Haven't gotten close since, but that's neither here nor there.
I was never close, just for the record. I'm sure that's going to shock everybody that listens to this podcast.
And we're not going to get you in the vertical at the Combine next February. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Tweet at us. You can find Michael at M Lombardi NFL. You can find me at Femi Abebefe. Our producer, Stephen Bond, with us, as always, on the ones and twos. But Michael, before we get into all the football, the breaking news in sports is that one of the potential rookies of the year in the NBA is now gone for the entire season. Chet Holmgren suffered a Frank injury up in my neck of the woods in Seattle playing in a pro-am game, and it's tough news for OKC.
Horrible for OKC. But, I mean, look, I think this guy is – you know, when I was first starting at the 49ers in 1984, our first draft, we drafted this kid named Todd Shell, a linebacker from BYU. Mm-hmm. And he came in and he was always hurt. So the players nicknamed him. They called him Crystal Shell. And the reason they called him Crystal was he was always broken. And so he couldn't be called glass because glass wasn't expensive. Crystal was. So they called him crystal because he was so expensive. His contract at that time, which we would laugh at today at how cheap it was. Mm-hmm. So he was crystal shell. And he stayed hurt most of his career, you know, and never really amounted to what we thought he would become. But, you know, when I see Holmgren, I think he's going to be crystal.
You know what? If that's the case, Oklahoma City, tough situation for them. Chet Holmgren is 7 feet tall, has a very thin frame for the folks who don't really be
thin. I mean, I'm fatter than him. I mean, like, seriously, and I'm 5'11". I mean, like, come on. I mean, how's he going to hold up? Seriously. I mean, his first NBA game, he's going to have bruises all over his body.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. He was a number two overall pick in this past summer's draft here. And he joins a list of guys in the NBA like Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Blake Griffin, who were injured and didn't play in their rookie season. So it's a tough break, literally and figuratively, for Chet Holmgren there, who suffered that Liz Frank injury in his right foot. But let's get to the football here, Michael. That's why everybody came and listened to this podcast. Jimmy Garoppolo is currently with the San Francisco 49ers, but we know he's practicing off to the side, not really a part of the team, but technically he is on the roster. You have some news to share on the latest with Jimmy G.
I keep asking teams all the time, like, why don't they just cut Jimmy G now? Mm-hmm. And the answer that I got back from multiple teams is they don't want him to go to Seattle. And I said, well, how interested is Seattle in Jimmy G? And he said, oh, they're very interested in him. Mm. So for all the talk about Geno, for all the talk about Drew Lock, I think Seattle knows they're going to get Jimmy G. And I think San Francisco knows that he could go there. So they're trying everything in their power to prevent that. And right now they have no takers. So what I think will happen is the Friday before the opening weekend, I think they'll cut Jimmy G. I think that's when they'll cut him. And then he'll have to go do his contract and go up to Seattle and go there. But there is no interest in allowing Seattle to even have a week preparation with Jimmy G to come as their starting quarterback. But I do believe, reliably reported to me, that Seattle is the team that wants him. And for all the talk about Geno and Locke, no, I think they have their eyes on Garoppolo.
That's interesting because last week on the podcast, I told you that I spoke with my boots on the ground out in my old neck of the woods in Seattle. And I asked about Garoppolo, saying that would they be interested when he's eventually cut by the Niners? And the response was probably, yeah, Jimmy G is significantly better than Geno. And I responded, I said, I just wonder how soon he'd be able to start since he's probably not getting cut for a couple of weeks. He said that, yes, the Jimmy G thing is tricky even before you get to the salary part. So you think that this is just because the Niners don't want him to be able to play in that week two game where they're hosting the Seattle Seahawks later this season?
Bingo. And the longer that they can prevent that, the better off they feel like the chances of him playing will not happen. And look, I don't think it's anything they have against Jimmy. There's no market. And, you know, I mean, is there going to be a market after this weekend? Is anybody playing anybody this weekend? I don't know. No. You know, even if the player guys, you know, 5-10 plays at the most. So is anybody going to really be calling? I mean, they're not going to get any offers now. And so they want to make it as difficult as they possibly can because they know he's going to end up in Seattle, at least as of right now. Now, we know there's no absolutes in football. Things could change. But for right now, that's why they're holding on to him. That's why they're doing all this, is to keep him from playing in that week two game against them. I mean, that's the last thing you want to do, is cut your guy and then go up there and then your guy doesn't play good and the guy you cut plays well.
A month from today, the Seahawks will be hosting the Atlanta Falcons in week three. Who's going to be their starting quarterback for that game?
Can we get DraftKings to put – I would bet Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay. Wow, you would bet Jimmy Garoppolo.
Even though he's not on the roster. I mean, if DraftKings has that prop, I would bet that. I seriously would bet that because I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, I think that's where he's going. I mean, look, it's no secret that they've been holding out, you know. And I think because of that, it's going to work out. I think they're going to end up getting him because where else is he going to go? Where else can he go?
Mm-hmm. I don't see where else he can go. Cleveland sounds like they're ready to go with Jacoby Brissett, I should say. The New York Jets situation, that ended up not being a season-long injury, so Zach Wilson should take over as the quarterback at some point. It's in a game of musical chairs. There's not a whole lot of chairs left to go around, so it's Seattle. That's makes right. The most sense here if Jimmy G is going to be starting this season.
Right. And so also taper in the contract, right? So he's making what, 24, 25 million? Mm-hmm. So if you say, you know, there's a lot of teams I'm sure that would want him as the backup quarterback, but you, if you trade for him, you've got to agree to a contract that's a backup contract. So that's a hard thing to do, right? And if Garoppolo knows he can get a starting contract in Seattle, he's not going to redo his contract. Don Yee's not a dumb guy. Don Yee's smart. He's sitting there saying, okay, San Francisco, you don't want to cut him, we'll wait. You know, I'm not redoing a contract with any team you want to trade him to. So if they got $24 million to put on the cap, you know, after these games this weekend, people are going to get their cap in order because it's no longer top 51. It becomes all your players count on the cap. So there's no way that somebody's going to take that on. Cleveland could do it. Cleveland could do it, but Cleveland doesn't want to do it. So where is he going to go? It's not teams aren't interested. It's where does he fit the cap? Houston doesn't want to. Doesn't sound like they're interested. You know, I mean, Yee has a lot of leverage because he's sitting there on $25 million. And unless he says yes to redoing the deal, they have to cut him.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'm looking at the Fox Bet odds. That's the last odds I was able to find for Jimmy G's next team. And this was as of August 10th. The Seahawks were the favorite, plus 250 to be Jimmy G's next team. The Houston Texans were 4-1, Giants plus 550, Buccaneers plus 850, Browns 9-1. So everybody kind of realizes that if there's a potential starting quarterback vacancy, it's up in Seattle. But with that said, Pete Carroll is talking about this Geno Smith, Drew Lock thing. Like, it's still a quarterback competition because I understand Jimmy G is not on the roster, so he has to go about it that way.
Right.
But Drew Lock is going to be playing tomorrow night against the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe we see Geno Smith as well as this quarterback competition extends into September.
Yeah, I mean, look, what else can Pete say, right? Pete's got to be positive with the guys he's got. He's messaging to his own team. So I think ultimately, you know, that's what he can only say. But I do know reliably that that's where he wants to go. That's where they want Garoppolo, and they could get Garoppolo. Look, I think the Giants should make the move for Garoppolo. Now, I know, you know, Daniel Jones played better. No, look, stop, please. We've had 38 games to watch Daniel Jones. Yeah. Enough is enough. Like, what are we going to do? And, you know, I don't see, to me, if you're the Giants and you trade for and you get Garoppolo and you give up a sixth round pick and you fit him into your cap. Now, I know they're tight on the cap, but you bring him in there and you kind of now you have 16 games to evaluate him. I think when you become a GM of a team without a quarterback, you got to take as many chances on quarterbacks as you can until you hit. Until you hit. Like, take him and then, you know, compare him to this draft class that's going to come out. What happens if you get into the draft and you don't really have that top pick or you win too many games and you're not, you know, what happens then?
Yeah. You said that you think Jimmy wants to go to Seattle. Does he have revenge on the mind, or is this maybe just the logical best scenario for him to be a starting quarterback?
I think probably it's a similar offense. You know, with Shane Waldron, who came from the Rams, you know, which is a similar offense to what Shanahan ran in Washington. So there's a lot of continuity in terminology. I think Jimmy wants to go to a place where he's going to learn that the language is the same. You know, it's challenging, like when Brett Favre went from Green Bay to the Jets, it was a completely different language. It affected him a little bit. I think he wants to go where the language is going to be the same. Seattle would be the same language. Cleveland would be the same language. I think that's going to be, that matters more. Plus, he gets an opportunity. Look, if you're Don Yee and Jimmy Garoppolo, you want to go somewhere where you have a chance to get paid $25 million. You know, if you go somewhere where you're not going to play. I mean, look at Baker had to take a pay cut this year off a guaranteed contract. You know, you put yourself in a tough spot.
All right, Michael, I've been putting off this news for too long, but we have to get to it because it's big news with my beloved Dallas Cowboys. Their all-pro offensive tackle, Tyron Smith, who made the blue chip list. We're doing this blue chip, red chip series. When we did the offensive tackles and the offensive line episode, Tyron Smith was a blue chip for the tackles, but he has suffered an avulsion fracture of the knee, which in layman's terms is the hamstring tendon that sits on the back of the knee pulling off the bone. So he's going to need surgery. If he's back at all this season, the earliest they're projecting is December. Sounds like it's a similar injury to what Mekhi Becton suffered last year that had him out for that entire rest of the season after that week one game against the Panthers. Where does this leave Dallas here with Tyron Smith now out for the foreseeable future?
I mean, this is a hard thing to overcome. I think they're going to have to move Steele over to left tackle, which is he was playing right tackle right now. Mm-hmm. And then they've got to hope for one of these young players, whether it's Bell that they drafted in the fourth round or the kid they drafted in the fifth round, Watsiki or something like that. I forget how to say his name. You know, they're going to have to play a young player at right tackle or try to find a right tackle. I think that's ultimately what they have to do. They have to put Steele at left. This is a hard injury for them. What we talked about when we talked about Smith, we said, look, he's a really good player. He just can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of their fortune of the season was on the left tackle. It's a hard injury to overcome. You lose your left tackle in the NFL, it's a hard injury to overcome. Green Bay's overcome it a little bit, but if it cost them in a playoff game, right?
Yep.
It's so challenging when you do that. So, I mean, you know, they're hard to find left tackles. They're hard to replace. This, to me, shifts the odds. I really think this puts Philly as the favorite in the East. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think that this injury weakens the offensive line for the Cowboys significantly. I think it affects Prescott. It affects their run game. You know, one of the things what I think people lose sight of with left tackles in football is when you have a left tackle that can block, run block, it sets a different tempo. Like the Patriots moved Trent Brown from right tackle last year to left tackle. Okay. And everybody said, why did they do that? They did that to run the ball left. They did that because it gives them a better chance to really dominate the line of scrimmage going to your left. When you play in the National Football League, most of the right ends as you face the defense from behind are light. They're not physical. And so they're good pass rushers, but they're not great run defenders. Yep. And if you get a run blocker, when Becton played left tackle for the Jets early in his career, I mean, and Gase was running the ball behind him, it was 6-7 yards almost every snap. So what happens is the defense almost has to rotate their defense behind their softer end. So if you're the Raiders and you're playing against Tyron Smith and Chandler Jones is not a great run defender, you got to kind of make your secondary come play, have a run support on that side. Well, that changes the whole tenor of the game. And if you can do that, you know, and so the great left tackles, the Jonathan Ogdens, those guys that could run block, it's a different game. You lose that. Now, all of a sudden, where are we going? You know, it's a hard thing to replace. The Patriots are going to run the ball left because they're going to run behind Big Trent Brown when he feels like blocking somebody. So it's going to be a tough thing to do. And I think that this injury is hard. It affects him in the run game, and it affects him in the passing game as much. They won't be as physical. And I think, you know, we had Brian Broaddus on the show on the Lombardi line a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about Dak Prescott, about, you know, when Dak can throw it, you know, 30 times, he's a better player than when he has to put 40. Most quarterbacks are. I think this affects Elliott. I think it affects Pollard. I think it affects their running game as much.
Yeah, and here are the stats to back it up here from Paul Hembekaitis, the producer over for Get Up over at ESPN. The Cowboys rushing left since 2019, so running to Tyron Smith's side, when he's on the field, it's 5.4 yards per rush. When he's off the field, it's 4.3 yards per rush. That's a full yard less when Tyron Smith is off the field. Then also Dak Prescott in play action since 2019, his quarterback rating 78 when Smith is on the field, 47.2 when Smith is off the field. Like you mentioned, it's going to affect the run game and the pass game. And as a fan, Smith hasn't played since a full season, since 2015. So I always wonder, why wasn't the team ready with some kind of contingency plan? Because he's been a guy who's been hurt over the last several years here. So it's almost to me like the front office maybe dropped the ball here.
Well, they did last year. Remember, they signed Ty Neschke. They thought he could be the swing tackle for them, and that didn't work out, right? So they've tried. I mean, they've tried to carry him. They've tried to manufacture it. But they've got, you know, they've got areas where they've got some money going somewhere else, and they couldn't get to it. I think most fans misinterpret what a true great left tackle can do because it's the run game. It's the run game that really helps because most teams run the ball to their right. Most teams are right-handed. But when you can run left behind a really good left tackle, it opens up the entire game and it forces the defense to do things. So to me, I didn't know those numbers in terms of what you recited from a Get Up, but to me, that's the value of when you get a left tackle that can run block. It's like Jimbo Elliott. Everybody said coming out in the draft when Jimbo Elliott was at Michigan State, he can't play left tackle. He doesn't have quick enough feet. Well, he can run block, and he's good enough to block the edge, and he gave that Giants that left side running game that they desperately needed. So I think there's a misconception about that.
Yeah, the first-round pick for the Dallas Cowboys, Tyler Smith, out of Tulsa was supposed to be the left tackle in waiting when Tyron Smith eventually hung him up here.
They might have to kick him out.
They might have to kick him out
and put McGovern in there. I mean, they could do that too. Now, I thought Tyron Smith is getting better. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can't hold. You know, it's a tough challenge to go as a young player to go in there and play at left tackle. But, you know, I mean, they may have to do that. I mean, they may have to do that. The guy's big enough. He's 6'6". I mean, he's over 6'5", right? So he's big enough. He's got enough arm length. I'm just trying to look up his arm length at the combine here. You know, he is
he's physical.
34 arm, 10 hand, 30 and 10 and three quarter. Oh, fuck. He's got those big hands, Femi. Oh, that's just what I want. That's just what I want. You see the mitts, Femi, the weapons. When you have a hand like that, they're fucking weapons. That's what he would say.
Yeah, there you go. He's got those heavy hands that can move people here. But the Patriots, there's been rumors about them potentially shopping Isaiah Wynn. Do the Cowboys maybe call up your buddy Bill and maybe get themselves a left tackle who has some experience?
I think if Bill felt like his tackle situation was improved, was good enough, then he certainly Wynn. He's got to ask himself the question, do I play Wynn this year and let him go, or am I going to re-sign him, or do I let him go and get something really valuable back? Because there's probably a good chance Wynn goes into the free agent market and Bill would get a compensatory pick. So those are the kind of decisions you've got to make.
Yeah.
Those are what you kind of have to look at. So, but, you know, for to me, Dallas, if I'm Dallas, I'm going to put Smith over at left tackle for right now. He's 6'4", 5". He's big enough, 324 pounds. He ran 5.02 at the combine. He's got all these things going for him. Put him over there. Live with him. You got to help Chip. You got to help him out. We might as well get on with it. If we drafted him to be the left tackle of the future, the future is now.
Yeah, unfortunately, he hasn't been training at left tackle since the mini camp in June. So it's going to have to be a crash course over the next 2 weeks since the season gets going on September 11th. But we're going to take our first break here on the other side. We'll continue the Blue Chip Red Chip series in the kicking game with the kickers and the punters.
Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game, and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The Blue Chip Red Chip series continues, Michael, and we've made our way to the kickers and the punters. We're going deep dive. We're not ignoring the kicking game here because it is an important part of the game. But first, before we get into the list here, as we always do, let's define what a Blue Chip and Red Chip kicker is. So what is the criteria in your opinion, Michael?
Well, I think it's a guy that can make pressure kicks, and he's got incredible accuracy. You know, I think to be a blue chip kicker in the league, I think you got to be high. I think you got to be in that 90 percentile. You got to be able to make kicks at a high level in bad weather, good weather. It doesn't really matter. And you got to make pressure kicks. Like, you know, Vinatieri is a Hall of Fame kicker because he's had Hall of Fame kicks. I mean, look. I can still see it. It pains me. It freaking pains me to no end. But when he lined up to kick that field goal to send the game to overtime in the tuck game, I mean, it was a one iron. I thought Tiger Woods hit it, the damn thing. I mean, like, that was one of the greatest kicks I've ever seen in my life. Yep. I don't know how the hell we didn't block it because it really, I thought we could have blocked it. But he destroyed it. So to me, it's like the automatic sense of that kick and handling pressure and being able to do it year after year and having range on your kicks. And the other thing is, too, is when we look at kickers, we got to have a really good kicker that can onside kick. That's important. Does he have a multitude of onside kicks? You just can't have one. You got to have the ability to do that because you're going to need him to make a play there. And then the ability to really put the ball where you want it on kickoffs. For example, you know, when Buffalo kicked off to Kansas City with 13 seconds, if you know you got a kicker that can put that ball and plop it high like the Phil Mickelson flop shot, right? Yep. And you know you can do that. That sets your coverage up. So there's all these elements that go into kicker that is just not making field goals.
How does the ability to do your job in adverse conditions factor into the evaluation? Because you mentioned the Vinatieri kick, which in my opinion is the greatest kick in NFL history. They're 40-something yards in a driving snowstorm. How does that factor into the evaluation when you break down these blue chip and red chip kickers?
It's huge. I mean, the kicker like Boswell, for example, you know, he's kicking in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a hard place to kick. Last year, he was 95% on every kick. I mean, that's a hard place. The wind swirls. The weather's not very good. Where Ku was 95% kicking in Atlanta. Now, Ku also kicks indoors in New Orleans, so now he's got 10 games indoors. He goes to Tampa, that's 11. So then he goes to Carolina, typically not bad weather, that's 12. So the chance that he may kick in five bad games, but the problem is he may have to go to Green Bay to get to the Super Bowl and kick in that weather. You know, and so you're always worried about that. You can say, well, you got to pick a kicker that can kick to where you play. True, I get that. But you also got to pick a kicker that can kick if you got to get out of there, if you got to go to Green Bay, or if you have to go to, you know, New York, or you've got to go to Seattle and with bad weather, with the rain and the sleet, all that stuff. It is difficult.
Let's get to the red chips list here then, Michael, because you have three red chip kickers, and they are as follows. Nick Folk of the New England Patriots entering his age 38 season, his 15th year in the league. Then a couple of younger guys, Jake Elliott of the Philadelphia Eagles, age 27, his sixth year in the league. Then Chris Boswell, who you just mentioned, of the Pittsburgh Steelers, entering his age 31 season, his eighth year. But I want to start with Nick Folk because he's had a fascinating career, in my opinion, because I remember when he was a rookie for the Dallas Cowboys back in 2007. He was a Pro Bowler, had really good 2 years to start off his career. But then things went south in 2009, which almost made me think that this kicking position is more mental maybe than it is physical. It almost feels like sometimes some guys can get the yips. Is that kind of your read on this position here?
Yeah, I mean, the reason, look, he was, what, 93% of his kicks last year. Yeah. You know, he missed three extra points, which is shocking. You know, and he didn't kick off. That's the other thing. But, you know, but I think he's gotten better. He's become really, I mean, look, when they signed him, I don't think they felt like he was their answer. They had a young kid from Michigan who they signed as a college free agent, you know, that looked like he had a chance. But no, it's so much mental, Femi. It's so much being able to endure the pressure to be able to handle it. It is truly like being a pro golfer. Yeah. You've got to be able to make those kicks when you're lined up. You got to make the 10 footers in a playoff tournament. You got to make the 10 footer at the British Open. It's hard to do. And Folk, I think, has done it. Boswell, you know, he was hurt last year. He played 13 games. It was shocking. He only attempted 20 field goals. He made 19 of them, 59 long. He does he's a good kickoff guy, not a great kickoff guy, but he plays in bad weather, and that really helps him. I mean, I think that's key. You know, he's able to handle the bad weather. He's able to do the things he needs to do there. So I think he's outstanding. I really do. I think he's done a great job for them.
Boswell has been above 90% in each of the last five seasons, which is just insane as a kicker. Like, that's really good stuff there. I mean, if not for his rival, Justin Tucker, for the Baltimore Ravens, he'd probably be touted as the best kicker in the game with what he's been able to do at Heinz Field or whatever they're calling that field now. Jake Elliott of the Philadelphia Eagles, he was above 90% last year. And this is just another blue chip player on an Eagle, or rather a red chip player, I should say, on an Eagles roster that's pretty talented.
And he's got range. I mean, this kid's got range with his kicks. He's, you know, he can make pressure kicks. I think he's done a really good job of doing that. I just don't think he's the same level as, I mean, there's so many good kickers. I mean, Jason Sanders in Miami is really good. I mean, Bucker at Kansas City, I thought he was certainly a consideration. I thought he didn't have the best season that he typically did have. He missed a couple kicks last year, which is unlike him. He's 92%. But I thought Elliott was at least a red chip player. Look, I think this Eagle team, in the news of Smith injury, and knowing Dallas is going to struggle a little bit with their offensive line. And I think this Philly team is loaded for bear to take it over. I really do.
Yeah. No, Butker, you mentioned him. He is one of those guys to where I think he makes the hard ones look easy, and sometimes the easy ones look hard. Just from when I'm watching him, it'll be a 41-yard field goal, and it's like, uh-oh, who knows where this is going to go. But then if he lines up from 56, it's right down the middle.
I mean, he missed six extra points, which is shocking, right? For a guy as good as he is, he missed six extra points. You know, so I just think, you know, it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, look, the kid in Seattle, Jason Myers, I mean, he didn't miss a kick last year. Didn't miss a kick. He was 24 for 24, 100%. You know, but, you know, he had, I think he missed four extra points. Can you imagine that?
That's insane. It's just the extra point has really gotten into these guys' heads. Well, let's get to the best of the best here. We're going to take another quick break here. We'll get to the best of the best with the blue chip kickers and also the blue chip punters, according to Michael Lombardi.
All right, as somebody who's trying to get into golf, I need to start fresh. Where do I get good golf clubs? Well, you got to start with your driver, right? So I needed to find a place that would help get me set up with something that's customizable to my game that is ever so developing. That's where our friends at PXG really step up, because nobody makes golf clubs the way they do. PXG clubs have absolutely incredible customizable technology that'll have you playing your best. I mean, shout out to my buddy Chris out here in Henderson, Nevada, who's hooking me up with a driver. I'm supposed to pick it up next week. It's going to be great as I go out there onto the range and test this thing out. You can find a PXG location for your own personal fitting, to where you go through the simulation process. They figure out what you need. Do you need more club speed? Do you need more grip? Whatever you need, they get it done for you. The PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving club will play, so you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and to get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology and you get incredible ball speed that pushes distance to the absolute limits. Game changer has been thrown around so much it's lost its meaning, but trust me when I tell you the PXG driver is a true game changer. You'll be as impressed with it as I am. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/gmshuffle and use code GMshuffle at checkout. That's pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle.
Okay, Mike, let's get to the best of the best in the kicking game, and let's start with the blue chip kickers here in the NFL, according to you. And we'll start with Daniel Carlson of the Las Vegas Raiders, entering his age 27 season, his fifth year in the league. And then you have Justin Tucker of the Baltimore Ravens, entering his 11th season. Evan McPherson, the sensation from last postseason of the Cincinnati Bengals, entering his second season. Matt Gay of the Rams and Youngway Koo of the Atlanta Falcons here. But let's start with Justin Tucker, because he's a five-time first-team All-Pro. I think if you polled 100 people on the street who watch football and you asked them who the best kicker in the NFL is, this is the name that they would come up with.
Yeah, I think when Tucker's unbelievable. McPherson, these guys make pressure kicks, you know, and I think that that's one of the things that when you're watching them, you know, like last segment I talked about Boswell. He missed four kicks last year. I was looking at 2020 stats, but last 2020 he didn't miss very many kicks. So to me, I think ultimately these guys, they handle pressure so well. I mean, when Tucker doesn't just make a field goal. It goes like if the field goal was like tucked in by 4 yards on either side, Tucker would still make most of them, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's
how
crazy
good he is, you know. And McPherson, look, McPherson was the weapon of all weapons. You feel bad if you're a Bengal fan, because if they would have got anywhere near a field goal attempt, 58, 57, he would have made that. That game would have gone to overtime. You know, so, and doing research for this, you know, I was surprised how good Gay was last year for the Rams. I mean, you know, I know he kicks in a perfect setting, but he was really good. I mean, he was the second best kicker in terms of percentage of field goals made. He was 32 for 34, 55-yard long one. You know, he made almost every single extra point. He was outstanding in that area. So, And same thing with Koo. Koo was 30 for 30 on extra points. He was 93% on field goals. Both guys, I know they play indoors, and that really helps, but both guys are really good players. They're good, and they surprised me, the level of how good they were. You know, Riley Patterson, at the kid that the Lions signed for 7 games, I mean, he was sensational for the 7 games they signed him for. Now, whether he'll continue that trend, I don't know. But I think ultimately when you look at it, like Joey, you talk about kickers that move around. Joey Slive, the kid that was in Carolina, he ended up being last year, he ended up finishing the season. He was on 3 teams. You know, mm-hmm. He was 92%. I think he was at the Saints for a little while. He was everywhere. But it makes a difference. It makes a difference. It makes me nervous about the Chargers. Do they have a good enough kicker? Are they going to be good enough? But when you look at the Raiders with Carlson, his ability to make pressure kicks was outstanding.
Speaking of pressure kicks, I want to get back to Justin Tucker because he had one of the most memorable moments from the NFL season last year, the game-winning 66-yard field goal against the Detroit Lions, an NFL record, kisses it off the crossbar, goes in. I want to bet off of it, so that's why maybe it's so memorable to me, but just the fact that they were even willing to attempt that just goes to show you how good Justin Tucker is and how much of a pressure performer he is as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, they should have gotten. It should have been a 71-yarder, and he would have made it because there was a. You know, they missed the penalty there.
Wasn't it a delay of game or something, or was it?
Yeah,
a false start?
They missed the penalty. You know, of course, in that game, Hollywood Brown had 2 touchdown drops, which maybe the game would have been there. So, look, I mean, one thing that's the problem. Here's where the other problem comes in with these kickers. When you're playing Tucker, or you're playing Carlson, or you're playing a guy that you know going in the game, your strategy has to change as a defensive coach. Like, for example, the other night, Monday Night Football, the Giants were playing the Bengals. I think it was, or Sunday night. I was flying from Tucson to Las Vegas, and I was on the plane and I was watching the game. And it's at the end of the first half, and the Bengals had the ball, and they got called for another holding penalty. And it was 3rd and 20. They got called for another holding call, and Daboll declined the penalty. Mm-hmm. When he declined the penalty, I think the kick was. Let me look it up here, Femi. I got 1 second here. I'll tell you. I want to be right on this. God damn it! I don't want to be wrong.
Well, it was interesting because I think a lot of people thought that he would go ahead and accept it and try to push them back a little bit further to try to get a stop.
This is my point. I mean, with McPherson. You know, with McPherson over there, you have to almost say, okay, I'm going to push you. I got to take the penalty. And if they get, I'm going to give it exactly what it was here. If they get so many, they're not going to convert the first down, but if they make it an easier kick, then okay, I'll take it. But, you know, the 2-minute warning, let's see here. It ended up being 1 minute here. I got to look through.
No, I got you. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of time to look that up here because I think it is an interesting point to make just from a coaching standpoint of how these kickers can impact what you're doing out there on the field here. So it ended up being a, let me see here, because I think I have it up here for you as well. It was towards the end of the second quarter, I believe it was. Excellent stuff. So it ended up being a 31-yard field goal, it looks like. Or am I seeing this wrong? Anyways.
No, you're seeing it wrong. No, but here's what it was. It was in the first quarter.
Yes.
They had a third and 16 at the Giant 32. And there was a penalty on Smith holding. It was his second penalty of the night. They declined it. So now McPherson trots on and kicks the 50-yarder. If he takes the penalty, it's fourth. It would have been 3rd and 26.
Yep.
Now, he can't attempt that field goal, so maybe they get enough yards back in it. Okay, maybe they do. But my point of the conversation here is simply this, that when you're going against McPherson or Tucker or any of these guys, your strategy as a play caller, right? Your strategy as a play caller defensively is, I got to make sure I knock him out of field goal range, or I can't give up that 5-yard check down on 3rd and 12 because that's 3 points.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do, right? That's a hard thing to do. That layers into your calls. And these guys make a difference because when you trot Tucker out there now, he's making the kick. Like, he's making the kick. Like, one of the situations in football we don't talk enough about is when the offense is backed up. Say Baltimore has pinned their opponent inside the 1-yard line, okay? and Cincinnati has the ball coming out. Well, if I'm Baltimore and I have Justin Tucker, every week on Friday, I am practicing that situation identically. Because here's what happens, Femi. Most offenses, when they're inside the two-yard line coming out, they have about five plays. They're going to run fullback in the flat. They're going to run fullback belly. They may run a quarterback sneak. They're going to run a nine route. They're not running their offense. They don't want to get called for holding, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to run, you know. So you as a defense coordinator know they have a small sample size on their menu. If you make them punt from back there and you have Tucker or you have McPherson, you get 3 points. You're going to get 3 points. Yeah. Even if that's a 3-point play there where the defense helps the offense. And I think to me, that's one of that by having a great kicker. See, people in the analytical community will say, which makes sense, right? Well, you know, the difference between Tucker 94.6% and, you know, Hopkins at Washington or two teams or Graham Gano at the Giants at 87% is probably one kick. Okay, I get that. It probably is. The difference is maybe two kicks. But there's a huge difference in how you call the game and how you score points. There's an eccentric value that goes into this thing that you can't measure with just looking at the numbers.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the minute those teams like Cincinnati and Baltimore cross midfield, it's points. You can pretty much chalk it up.
Same thing with the Raiders. I mean, yeah. You know, Josh McDaniels has got Carlson. He's going to try to, you know, hey, we're going to get 3 points. He's going to make it. And if he doesn't make it, we're all shocked. And the other thing it does for you, too, it gives you a sense because, remember, a missed field goal is a turnover. So when you send Tucker out to kick a long field goal or you send Carlson out, your chances of turning the ball over are lower. You know, and it also is lower when you look at what are your odds on fourth down. If I go for this on fourth down and I got Tucker. Yeah. You know, like when we had Janikowski, he was a great kicker, but he wasn't a 90% kicker. And he had a strong leg, but it wasn't always reliable. So, you know, you send him out there and you turned the ball over. It wasn't as good as it looked at times where you didn't manage it. When Parcells had Chris Barr, he knew he couldn't make a long field goal, so he went for it on all fourth downs.
Yeah, that affects the way you call the game, especially once you cross over that 50-yard line. So those, just to recap, the blue chip kickers, Daniel Carlson of the Raiders, Justin Tucker of the Ravens, Evan McPherson of the Cincinnati Bengals, he was perfect, 14 for 14 in the playoffs last year. Matt Gay of the Rams and Younghoe Koo, the NFL red zone legend of the Atlanta Falcons, because every time the Falcons get in the red zone, they ain't scoring a touchdown. You can try Younghoe Koo out there. Let's get to the punters here, Michael. And before we talk about the list, the criteria for a blue chip punter is what?
Net punting. It's net punting. It's not gross punting. It's not how far you hit the ball. It's can you directionally kick? Look, one of the guys that should have been the MVP of a Super Bowl was the kicker for the Giants when they beat the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Steve Weatherford?
Weatherford. He was sensational. I called him Rutherford. I mean, I knew he was a Ford. I didn't know whether it was rough or weather.
One of them.
I mean, you know, he was sensational. I mean, he won the game for him. The Patriots starting field position, their average starting field position in that game, their best starting field position was the 24-yard line. You make an offense play on a long field, and you can directionally punt and pin them back. Again, if you pin them back and you can put the ball inside the 20, like the kid Dixon at Seattle, he's had 40 punts inside the 20, plopped them in there. That's a long field you're going on. That's a long field. You know, it's field position. It's, you know, and when you have that, and I know people don't give a shit about their punter, I'll just punt it, and you can control the direction of where you're punting the ball, and you can control your coverage by doing that, and you can build your coverage into that, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, if you can pin teams back, that affects the way that they call plays as well, because they're not going to do anything that's ultra aggressive when they're pinned in their back end. At least most teams are not going to do stuff that's ultra aggressive. Here's a list of blue chip punters, though. AJ Cole of the Las Vegas Raiders, Brian Anger of the Dallas Cowboys, Michael Dixon, who you mentioned, of the Seattle Seahawks, Logan Cook of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Jack Fox of the Detroit Lions here. So the Raiders have a blue chip kicker and a blue chip punter. But the punting game is interesting because we've seen the traditional Ray Guy style of punting. But now we're starting to see this rugby style of punting that's taken over the past decade or so. How has that kind of affected the punt game and made things a little bit easier for some of these punters here with that rugby approach?
Well, I think it allows you to put the ball in. Like, I think I believe that, you know, the kid from Seattle, Dixon, is a rugby guy. Yep. Or he's got some, whether it's an Australian football guy.
He's an Australian.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, to be able to pin that ball back and get, you know, and not return it and make them start. I think he had 40 of them, and he had 40 inside the 20. I mean, that's what you're looking for. That's what you're looking for. And, you know, you can't have – you know, you can't have that ability without kind of being able to control the football like those rugby guys can do. It's kind of amazing how they do it. They can spin it or work the ball around. It's pretty impressive. But again, you gotta have that skill set.
Do you know Brian Anger's claim to fame, the Dallas Cowboys punter?
No, tell me.
So he's entering his age 34 season. It's his 11th year, but he was famously picked in the third round by the Jacksonville Jaguars back in 2012. And that is the pick that has gotten more ridicule than any other one because he was picked five picks before Russell Wilson, who went to the Seahawks at the time the Jacksonville Jaguars needed a quarterback.
Only a Cowboy. Yeah, I mean, look, obviously. See, you know what that story tells you right there? You know what that story tells you right there? They didn't know their own team. They thought they needed a punter more than they needed a kicker.
It's just fascinating.
And that's the problem with the NFL. If you could sum up most teams' problems, is they can't evaluate their own team. They have no honesty when it comes to their own team.
In the third
round. We don't need a quarterback. We'll take the punter. We need a punter more than we need a quarterback.
And it goes to what you just said about how teams should, if you don't have the quarterback and you're a general manager, you just keep taking chances. Imagine if the Jaguars took a chance on Russell Wilson. Instead, they wanted Brian Anger, who is a good player in his own right, made the blue chip list, but he's no longer in Jacksonville. Now he's with the Dallas Cowboys. And
you know what's amazing about this conversation is, so I'm in Arizona and I'm watching tape, and I love watching high school players. I love it. I just love it. It's hard for me when they start talking about the 2024 class. Like, these guys are sophomores and I'm watching them on tape. I'm like, holy shit. These, you know, like Dominic Rioli, the center from the Lions, his son, oh my God, he'll be the first pick in a draft. Just somewhere he's going to be the first pick. Just write it down now. See if you can get DraftKings to get you that odds. I mean, he's going to be the first pick in the draft.
I was gonna say,
right?
When is he draft eligible? Like 2028 or something?
29, I mean, he'll be the first pick in the draft, right? So, I mean, I was like, holy shit, this guy's great. But what's remarkable about watching him is when you see these young players is you go to, and I think the star ranking system is full of shit. Like, I think the whole star thing is crap, right? There's so many 3 stars and they have 5 stars. Like, if the guy, because somebody's grading these high school kids, so they put a grade on them. So all 3 stars look alike. Like, some 3 stars look like 1 star, some 3 stars look like that. That's a dumping ground. You know, it's like a scout. When we first started getting the scouting, the 5 grade was the perfect, because you could be good, could be bad. And I put them right on the fence. Like, okay, I got it. You know, they don't want to make a decision. So the 3 stars, like, the guy doesn't really want to make a decision. He just jumps. So it's loaded with a bunch of guys. So, you know, I'm watching these 3 star. And then I go to see where these kids went, you know, and where they're committed to for the 2023 recruiting class. Alabama takes 3 quarterbacks. Like, there's Alabama. They have quarterbacks. Like, they're still taking multiple quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Clemson's taking multiple. Like, to me, that's what you have to do. Like, if you pay one, you got to take more. You got to keep going after them, because unless you get the perfect guy, you're never going to get it. Like, in pro football, I know you got 5 years with Trey Lance, but like I said this 2 years ago, Cleveland should have picked a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you got to keep staying on it. Like, you got to evaluate. I mean, Al Davis made the defensive coaches watch every quarterback in the draft. Because if there was a quick change, he wanted us to know that, you know, Bailey Zappi played at Western Kentucky, and here's what he did.
Yeah. No, that's the whole high school national thing. It's just tough to gauge because you don't
it's
know the
ridiculous.
The competition that
it's
they're playing
so
is a whole different thing. One guy who was a 3-star, though, Michael, was Baker Mayfield, and he was recently named the Carolina Panthers starting quarterback. We're going to talk about that next year on the GM Shuffle.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You could even bet on which team will make the playoffs coming out of the play-in tournament. You could take, say, the Lakers plus 215 to make the playoffs right now. That is an option at DK Sportsbook. Kings minus 165. Warriors plus 130. Those are just a few of the options available right now on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. You can download that app, use code SHUFFLE, and new customers just bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That is code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bet expires 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, Michael, final segment before we wrap things up here. We were talking punters in the last segment, and you brought up Steve Weatherford and his impact on that second Giants Super Bowl in this millennium. And I Googled Steve Weatherford just to see what he was up to. And Google Images shows a different Steve Weatherford from what we saw on the field.
Google
is jacked, man. Like, this guy is ripped. I think he's a fitness model. He poses for magazines and stuff. He does not look like what he looked like when he played. I mean, this guy might be a weak side linebacker.
Yeah,
now.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Hey, good for him.
For the folks who are listening, Google Steve Weatherford and click on the images link, and you will see a different Steve Weatherford from what you saw.
Guy should have been MVP of that Super Bowl. He should have been MVP of that Super Bowl. I defy anybody to tell me he wasn't the most valuable. I mean, they gave it to Eli, but this guy won the game for him. I mean, without him, it would have been a different game.
Shit, he might win Mr. Olympia now at this point.
Yeah, God bless him.
But let's get to the news and notes from around the league. And we saw that the Carolina Panthers named Baker Mayfield their week one starter after he beat out Sam Darnold in that competition. Matt Rhule going with the former number one overall draft pick in Baker Mayfield. And I guess my question to you, because we talked about this when you were here in town and we were having some nachos over at the booth here at Circa. Did the Panthers waste some reps doing this quarterback competition, or do you think they went about this the right way with Baker and Sam now eventually picking Baker 2 weeks out from the regular season?
I think they had to do it this way, right? You can't stand in front of your team and say Baker's the starter when he's never been there. So, it would be rude to Darnold. It would be not fair to Darnold to just begin. Look, Baker's pro tape is better than Sam Darnold's pro tape. I think Sam Darnold would admit that. So you had to let him go out and compete and see what happens. And if you're Matt Rhule, you've got to weigh that pro tape in the evaluation too. So I think the team had a chance to see both players. I bet the team's confident that they can win with both players. You know, but I do think what happens is if Sam turns it over early, there's the doubt that creeps into everybody's mind. I think they're better off starting with Baker, see how that goes. And, you know, look, both players will keep pushing one another. I don't think there's a chance that this will end just because, you know, that one guy. I mean, Baker didn't stay healthy last year. Sam wasn't healthy last year. I think it's important that you have the competition there. And I think it's important to stand in front of the team and say, here's the guy.
Is it fair to say that this is an uphill battle for Baker Mayfield and this offense, seeing that he didn't get to the team until July, so he missed all of the spring OTAs and minicamp, then he split reps of the ones in training camp for the first part of it, and now there's only a couple weeks left. Is this an uphill battle before we get to week one when they host the Cleveland Browns?
No, I think it's actually easier now because now they'll streamline the game plan, right? So now they're going to go play Cleveland. They know what Cleveland wants to run. So now they've got 2 weeks to practice all the plays they're going to run in the Cleveland game, right? They know how they want to set up their formations. And all of a sudden, instead of having to learn the whole playbook, you're just learning you're learning the game plan.
Game plan, yeah. Okay.
And so when you do that, that really sets it up a lot better for you. I think he'll be fine. Look, the key for Carolina is they got to get production out of Robbie Anderson. They have to, right? Like, you're paying him this money. He's your vertical outside receiver. You got to get some production out of him. And they got to keep McCaffrey on the field. They got to get production out of him. I think their offensive line's going to be better. I think Kawani, the kid they drafted from North Carolina State, mm-hmm. goes to left tackle. They put Brady Christensen in at left guard. Did the left side of the line's better. I think the right side of the line's better with Corbett and Morton and Moten. So, you know, I think they're better there. Cam Ewing's now a swing tackle, not a starting tackle. They're better. You know, Tremble can block with Ian Thomas on the line. They got to keep their players, their best players have to play better. That's pretty real. Mm-hmm. I mean, Robbie Anderson didn't play to the level that they paid him.
Yeah.
DJ Moore did. You know, Christian McCaffrey didn't play to the level that they paid him.
Yeah, he didn't
play.
He
has to. He didn't play. Well, that's not playing to the level, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If he can stay healthy, that's another dynamic to that offense. But like you've said pretty much this entire offseason, this roster is better than people are giving it credit for. Now, we'll see if they can get all these pieces to work in the same direction. Maybe they can be a frisky team out there in the NFC South. You were here in Las Vegas, Michael. You went to Patriots Raiders joint practice. Any observations that you have that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of observations. I mean, it was really a good practice. It was spirited. It was well done. It was, the players were respectful of one another. There was no fights. And there was a lot of good work. I mean, just to see, you know, from a guy that, you know, when you're around great players, it's an education to watch Davante Adams work, to see how accurate Derek Carr is with the football and throwing it into tight windows, to watch Mac Jones, how he leads the team, to see all those things is important. Coaches, and now the people that watch practice for Twitter, they get so caught up in, oh, this guy had a bad practice, this guy had a good practice, this guy's not very good. No, practice is not rehearsal. Right, you want to go out there and make mistakes. You want to learn about some of the young players and see what they do. And I think it was kind of a good way. I think the Patriots' offensive line is coming together. I think it's a work in progress. They need Trent Brown to be consistent there. I think they've got some really good running backs. I think Parker looks like he's a really good receiver and an upgrade for what they want to do. You know, I think when they run their scheme and they game plan, I think that'll be helpful. And defensively, which was my concern about the Patriots, did they have enough team speed on defense? I think they have improved that. And their corner situation, I thought Jalen Mills was more safety corner. I think he's now more corner. I thought he played pretty well. Adams is, to me, Femi, when you watch him work, when you watch him practice, you watch the details in his route running, it's an education. It's really, if you want to become a better scout, watch great players practice, watch great players play. You learn so much from that. And it was really, for me, it was fun to see him. And I think going to the Raiders, look, I think the Raiders have, they've got to get their inside of their offensive line fixed. It's a work in progress. And, you know, but they have some really good skill players. I didn't see Waller. He wasn't out there. He had something wrong with his shoulder or something. But, you know, other than that, they're pretty good at the skill. I mean, Hunter Renfro, you know, is watching how hard Adams works, and I think that'll make him a better player.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up Darren Waller, because I wanted to ask you about him. Like, is he going to be all right? Because Josh McDaniels was asked by reporters earlier this week, and he says that he's not concerned, but he also wouldn't commit that he would be playing in week one.
No, I think he'll be okay. I think, you know, there's you know, I think they're going to err on the side of caution when it comes to this guy. Look, he's missed 2 years. You know, he missed, four games last year. He was hurt.
Yeah.
They need him. A guy only scored 2 touchdowns. When you're that big and fast and you only score 2 touchdowns in the red area, that's a prop. They need him, and he'll make them a better team. And I think they got to err on the side of caution with him.
Yeah, Waller is a blue chip tight end. When we did the end episode and we talked about him among with Kelsey and Andrews and Goddard and the rest of the crew, they're Kittle in that group as well. So the Raiders really need Darren Waller, especially with him, Renfro, and Adams can be a terrific pass-catching trio. Some sad news in the world of football. We saw a Pro Football Hall of Famer quarterback Len Dawson passed away earlier this week at the age of 87. Famously played for the Kansas City Chiefs, won Super Bowl IV. Has the famous photo in the locker room at halftime of the Super Bowl where he's smoking the cigarette, which is one of my favorite photos from NFL history. But how will you remember Len Dawson, the Hall of Famer?
You know, as a kid growing up here in Ocean City, we had cable before cable was in. We got Philadelphia channels and we got New York channels. We got Philadelphia NBC. We got New York NBC. We got, you know, so at 4 o'clock, I can remember seeing those great Chief teams. And, you know, I was born in 59, so the year they went to the Super Bowl, they had some incredible, incredible players on their team. I mean, the Buck Buchanan, I wrote about him in my new book, Bobby Bell, Johnny Robinson, the safety. You know, before that, they had Emmett Thomas. I mean, this offensive line with Jim Tyre and Ed Buddy, they were so good. And Len Dawson, you know, this is a league where Len Dawson is not really relied on. I mean, he threw, I think he had 26 touchdown passes in that Super Bowl season. He was 39 years old. But this Chief team that Lamar Hunt built is really remarkable because it was such a conglomerate of guys they had to beat the NFL for. And Lamar did an incredible job. But what I remember of Len Dawson is just a guy that was just really efficient and effective at what he did playing the position. And he had some really good players around him. I mean, such a – and then you obviously goes into the inside the NFL career. No one says – ever says – I mean, Rick Goslin, the great beat writer for the Dallas Morning News who was in Kansas City at one time, he would say, look, there was nobody nicer than Len Dawson. And I know we have a friend of mine who's a huge Kansas City Chief fan. He wants to become the big daddy of the podcast for the Chiefs, although he says he doesn't complain. I'm sure they all complain. Nobody complains like big daddies. But, you know, these Chief teams were so good. They were so good. There's so much talent that AFL presented, and Dawson clearly was one of them.
Yeah, he was AFL MVP in 1962. Super Bowl MVP and Super Bowl IV there, NFL Man of the Year, which is the greatest honor there in 1973. So an all-around just great person and great football player as the game of football loses another great one there. Len Dawson passing away at the age of 87. Hate to end it on a sad note, but, you know, we want to celebrate Len Dawson's life.
Great life.
But yeah, great it's a life. Great you life, know, Hall I mean, of Fame life.
And the thing is, too, is when you look at these Chiefs teams and you see, you know, some of the players that they ended up getting through the year when they finally were able to break through and win the title, you know, and put Hank Stram essentially into the Hall of Fame. Because remember, when Hank Stram went to the Saints, he didn't win. You know, the one thing I would like to say, Don Coryell getting in the Hall of Fame, yes. Everybody, I think, look, Don Coryell is a fabulous story. I wrote about him in my book. Don Coryell's winning percentage is 52%. He never won a title. To put Don Coryell in ahead of Clark Shaughnessy, and people say, well, Don Coryell, the forward pass wouldn't happen. The pass wouldn't happen without Clark Shaughnessy. Like, the pass wouldn't happen without Clark Shaughnessy, and he can't get in. You know, Parker from the Lions. It's funny. I'm at the Patriots practice. The Patriots are practicing against the Raiders. You know, we're going to run stars come on the field. The star is the slot corner in nickel defense. Buddy Parker started the star. He invented the nickel defense, not George Allen. Buddy Parker did. Buddy Parker invented the two-minute offense. He can't get a sniff. He won titles for the Detroit Lions. He can't get a sniff. This whole system of going into the Hall of Fame is so ass backwards. Great respect for Don Coryell. Great respect for Dick Vermeil. Mm-hmm. Both those coaches that got in. But did Mike Holmgren not to get in?
That's
Mike Shanahan
one.
Not to get in? Yeah. Clark Shaughnessy can't get a sniff. Buddy Parker can't get a sniff. I mean, these guys are going to be lost. The legacy of the game was because of them. And, you know, and I hope people will buy my book and read it and try to have some sense of it. We need desperately what's happened in the NFL is it's a political battle. It's not the best of the brightest. It's who can argue the most and who can. There's so much back channeling. Are you going to vote for my guy? I'll buy that vote. I'll do this. Like, it's crap. Like, put a standard of excellence up there. You know, and I do it in the book. I have a criteria for the coaches in the book that you got to meet. Coryell didn't meet it. Vermeil didn't meet it.
Yeah. Well, people like Dick Vermeil, though, so, you know. It's
they love him, and yeah. I love him. His wine's tremendous. You know, it's great.
I didn't know he had a wine.
He's got a winery up there. He's tremendous. Okay. It's great. And he was tremendous. And people say, you know, he did a lot for the city of Philadelphia. There's no doubt. But the Hall of Fame should be something bigger than just that. It should be something that reserved for the elite. The elite of all coaches. It should be a standard of excellence. It shouldn't be easy to get in. And Coryell, he never won a title. Marty Schottenheimer won 200 games. 200 games in pro football. There's only 9 human beings on planet Earth that have done that. And he can't get in because he didn't win a title, but it's okay for Coryell to get in even though he's a 52% winning coach. Like, how's that make sense? Tony Boselli gets in the Hall of Fame He plays 6 years in the NFL, but Sterling Sharp can't get in because he's only played seven. How are you? I mean, this is Warren Commission shit. This is like Warren Commission stuff. You're like, this is so ridiculous, you know? Then the problem is nobody's going to the National Archives to prove the Warren Commission. They are now, but nobody's going to the history books to prove what's wrong about this whole system.
When you come out with your book, we need to have a separate episode just to talk about this, because I could go on for hours about this Hall of Fame stuff, because you've brought up some of the inconsistencies with the criteria. It's absolutely insane why some people get in and why some people don't get in.
Sterling Sharp has 65 touchdowns in seven seasons. He can't get a sniff. You know,
it's crazy.
I mean, Drew Pearson scored 45 touchdowns. He's in. He had an 11-year career. He's in.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Sterling Sharp was one of the best players you had to go play against. The only reason he only played 7 years, he had a neck injury. What offensive lineman in the history of the NFL? Like, seriously, let's just, and I don't mean to pick on Tony Boselli. He's a wonderful man. None of this is personal.
When he played, he was fantastic, but he didn't play long.
He's a Hall of Fame talent. He's not a Hall of Fame career. There's a difference there.
Yep.
There is a huge difference there. When you sit there and you look at some of the, what offensive lineman doesn't play at least 10 years in the league? Tell me, like, who doesn't play 10 years in the league? You know, Ron Yeary played 12 years in the league. You know, like some of these guys, they play long times. They always play. Dick Schaffrath played 12 years in the league. He can't get a sniff. But you're going to put a guy in who plays six, but it's okay. He plays six. But Terrell Davis, he plays six. But Sterling Sharp, he only played seven. You're not allowed to come in here, Sterling, because you're too short of a career. Are you serious?
Sterling Sharp's got to get somebody in there to go to bat for him, because that's what all it's turned into.
That's exactly what it is. Yep. It's all about who could argue the loudest. And that's the problem. Somebody was yelling for Don Coryell. Poor Buddy Parker. I'm the only one yelling for Buddy Parker. I'm the only one yelling for Clarkson. I have no relationship with Clarkson. Honestly, all I know is if you want to study coaching trees in the National Football League, you got to go to Clark Shaughnessy.
Yeah. This Hall of Fame process, let's leave it at this, because I can go on for more, Michael, and we're running out of time. But when you come out with your book, we're going to do a separate episode to highlight your book and also to talk about the inconsistencies that we see in this Hall of Fame criteria. But that does it for this week's episode of the show. Michael, passionate, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Femi.
Man, this is a good episode. It was a lot of fun here. Thank you to our listeners. As always, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to VSiN. Thank you to you, Michael, and to our producer, Stephen Bond, with us as always on the ones and twos. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.